Polycystic ovary syndrome, sometimes known as PCOS, I think, is said to be the most common hormonal disorder diagnosed in young women. It's associated with weight gain, irregular periods, acne, and sometimes infertility. It's a condition often thought of as being undiagnosed, but a new study has found it may be being actually misdiagnosed or even overdiagnosed. And tonight on the Health Report, science reporter Olivia Willis is looking at PCOS and some of the most common misconceptions around it. Liv, welcome back to breakfast.
Good morning.
PCOS, this polycystic ovary syndrome, is the most common hormonal disorder in young women. How common?
Well, prevalence figures kind of vary a little bit, but if we use the definition of PCOS that's used kind of in international guidelines, it's thought that it affects just under 1 in 6 young Australian women. So it's fairly common if you contrast it with something like endometriosis, for example, which is not a hormonal disorder, but also affects women's reproductive health. That's about 1 in 10. So it's a little bit more common than that. And it's generally diagnosed in women's 20s and 30s.
And it can be very serious for fertility issues, can't it?
It can be.
Is there a range of whether you have serious PCOS or less serious?
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a kind of range in terms of severity of symptoms. There's quite a spectrum. And actually, that's one of the issues around diagnosis that makes it quite tricky.
So we talked earlier about this new research that says it could be overdiagnosed. What's going on?
So basically, we know that definitely it is underdiagnosed in some instances. A lot of women talk about being kind of bounced around from doctor to doctor or not being diagnosed or given the label of PCOS for whatever reason. But this new research is suggesting that we might actually be, as awareness about the condition grows, we might also be overdiagnosing it in some instances. And the challenge is that, as the name suggests, it's a syndrome, so it's a collection of symptoms. And those symptoms, things that you mentioned earlier, things like irregular periods or acne, they're things that are also found in otherwise healthy young women. And so it's that thing we were talking about before. There is a severity, and it can be hard for doctors to kind of work out what the line is between normal and abnormal.
What happens if you are diagnosed with it? What are the doctors doing? Is there a pharmaceutical response? Or?
There's no cure as such. It's basically treated with lifestyle interventions. So it's about maintaining a healthy weight, encouraging healthy eating, reducing smoking and so on. But that's a kind of lifelong process. And that's also one of the issues around this is whether, because it is a lifestyle intervention-based treatment, having a label of PCOS is not always helpful because it can create a bit of anxiety.
But surely doctors aren't just labelling someone as PCOS if they've got acne or a range of symptoms. Isn't there some kind of imaging that goes on to prove it?
There is some criteria around that. So often it might involve an internal ultrasound that's looking for having actually polycystic ovaries, which are basically like enlarged ovaries.
Wouldn't that be the basic step for diagnosing this?
It is part of it, but one of the complicating things here is that you can have polycystic ovaries and not have PCOS, and equally you can have PCOS and not have polycystic ovaries. So that's kind of one of the misconceptions about it too. Some young women might have irregular periods and think, okay, this is PCOS, but it has to be a collection of symptoms and they're not the same for every person that's diagnosed.
Okay. Finally, Liv, you're also looking at the federal government's proposed religious freedom bill on the program, on the health report. What it might mean for doctors and healthcare workers?
Yeah, a number of concerns have been raised in the kind of medical space around this on effectively how this new religious freedom bill, it may, some practitioners say, add to the confusion around conscientious objection for doctors. So the Australian Medical Association, in its submission of the draft bill, it kind of said there's a lack of clarity around conscientious objection, and it may, in some instances, kind of undermine services for some groups or make it more difficult for patients to access care.
Currently, doctors can raise a conscientious objection, say, for performing an abortion, can't they?
They can. They can. So there are.
But they can be required to recommend another doctor.
That's right. This is where it might start to become a little bit grey. At the moment, there's pretty firm guidelines around having to refer patients if that's not a service that a doctor wants to provide. And basically, various medical bodies are saying some of the amendments in this bill might make that more complicated.
Might weaken those.
Potentially.
Liv, thanks very much.
Thanks.
ABC Health Reporter Olivia Willis brings you the Health Report tonight here on RN at 5:30 and, of course, anytime on the ABC Listen app.